Hi, this is Shiri. Welcome to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. We speak with wonderful people around the world who are making the world a better place because they are dedicated to helping people heal from intergenerational trauma. Sandwich parenting is all about being caught between the way we were parented and the way we now choose to parent our children. Welcome, Kelly Wilson, to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
I'm very excited to have you. One of my favorite things of all times is watching comedians. And so I am so curious about your origin story, because I see you also doing trauma recovery coaching and also podcasting and different things to help make the world a better place. But the combination is different for each person. So my question for you is, what is your origin story and why do you do what you do?
I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and all of the things that go along with that, because, you know, it's not in a vacuum. Emotional and psychological abuse. There's some serious dysfunction there, obviously.
Yes.
So when I was 10 years old, I looked in the mirror after something happened with my father, and I was like, I've got to get out of here. And I made a plan to, because it was the 80s then, you know, nobody really talked about anything. And I made a plan that when I was 18, I was going to go to college and I was going to be a teacher because I loved my teachers and I loved school. Like, school was a respite for me. That was a really safe place. And it still is. Like, when I walk into a school and there's certain smells that just put me at ease, you know, maybe I should live in an elementary school.
Yeah, exactly. Good morning, class.
Cafeteria chicken nugget.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And I did that. In the midst of all that, my family imploded and I was on my own when I was a senior in high school. But I still, you know, was able to get scholarships and go to college and became a teacher. I taught fourth, fifth, and sixth grade because kids younger than fourth grade cannot understand sarcasm.
Oh my gosh. I really
needed them to understand it.
That's so funny.
I needed an audience.
That's so funny. You needed to be able to deadpan something and have people go like, oh my gosh, you're so cool. As opposed to like, oh my gosh, she's getting so mean.
She's so mean.
So mean to me. I love that. And that's so true, eh? Like, it isn't really until grade 5 or 6 that they really get it.
Yes.
I like that. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. But I taught for 10 years and then I ended up leaving. My kids were small. And kids would, at the end of the year, they would always have this feedback for me that Mrs. Wilson is strict, but she's funny. So I was like wildly entertained by that every year. So when I stopped teaching, I had these two little kids at home. Mm-hmm. I was doing some freelance writing work. And I was like, I wonder if I am funny. So I signed up for a class here in Portland and the rest is history. Not really, because then I did stand-up comedy for a little bit. And then I got a job and then got fired. And that led to like just a teeny tiny, like, I don't know, 3-year like identity crisis.
If I may ask, what age was that identity crisis?
Oh, my goodness. It was right around 40.
I actually think that there's a problem with the number 40, to be honest.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's an age thing.
You know what I think it is? Okay, I've read one article, so that makes me an expert.
Well, of course, it makes all of us experts because of the one article from Globe and Mail in Canada. We're in Canada, so it's Globe and Mail. But for you guys, it's probably Harvard Business Review or New Yorker or like, exactly.
Yes.
So this article?
But it was about how women are so compliant in our 20s and 30s, we tend to be, because of estrogen. And then as we begin to lose estrogen, we don't care.
That explains a lot.
Right? The estrogen just puts a nice little, takes the edge off. The estrogen takes the edge off. We need it. We need it to deal with our husbands or our partners. We need to deal with children that we have. We need to deal with all the things that come with that. But as we get older, we don't need
We don't need to hold it together anymore.
Our stuff stops working. We dry up.
Yeah, we do.
And it's like, I don't care. I think that's it.
So that's a really good theory. I read an article. We're experts. I read an article that essentially said that they did a study of all people around the world, and it doesn't matter your gender, it doesn't matter your culture, it doesn't matter your size, it doesn't matter any of it. Your happiness is a U shape, and it goes from you're happy into like this dip. And they say it goes from like your 40s and 50s before it goes back up.
Oh, interesting.
I know, right?
I wonder how teenagers factor into that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually. There's probably a dip before you get to like 40s and 50s. Because teenagers, like, yeah, that's no fun. That's so fun. Okay, yeah, you know what? I'm going to stick with like my other stuff because I don't think I'm an expert on this. Yeah. But okay, so we took a bit of a detour, okay? But
okay, we
did. You actually got curious about whether or not you truly are funny. And so then you went into comedy for a bit and then you
I had an identity crisis.
Yes.
And I said to myself at one of my friends had a women's conference, mm-hmm. did the whole thing. And I thought, I want to combine mental health, speaking, and comedy. That's mm-hmm. what I want to do because that's where my heart is. And one of the things that I learned there is if somebody is doing something you want to do, ask if you can join them. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I was like, that is genius.
Mind blown.
I was like, yes. So I found actually in Portland, there was a guy who was doing, it was called Stand Up for Mental Health. And it was stand-up comedy about mental health. And so I chased him. I quite literally chased him down.
Oh my gosh.
Like, let me join your class.
Oh my gosh. That is so cool. So that's because
like what are the chances?
But that must be so difficult. I mean, mental health is not generally a topic with a lot of funny moments. How do you do this? Because I love comedy and comedians walk a pretty fine line sometimes.
Yes, definitely.
And you have to know a lot in order to say a little.
Yeah.
And make it very funny. So what is going on and how do you do that and why? Why humor?
One of the things that I learned quickly is that audiences are very uncomfortable with the idea of comedy and mental health being combined.
Right.
And
right.
Because the first assumption is that, oh, you're making fun of mental health condition.
Right.
And that's so I continually explain to people that we're not making fun of mental illness or mental health conditions or trauma or grief. We are taking our experiences within those areas, and that's what we make fun of. And there are themes within those experiences that most, if not all, people can relate with.
100%. Yes. And that's what humor is about. Humor is about making it relatable too.
Yeah, exactly. Touching on those themes. And for me, like humor was just, it's a part of me. It's how, like, I was also an army brat. It's how I made friends, how I survived. So that was one reason is that it came so naturally. It comes so naturally to me. It's just part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one is education. If I can make you laugh, I have an emotional connection with you. And if you have an emotional connection to information, you're more likely to remember it.
100%.
So that's the other one. And then another one, which I actually haven't done a whole lot of research about, I just have anecdotal evidence, is that making jokes about this stuff, our experiences with mental illness and trauma and grief, changes our brain for the better. And a friend of mine who has done this for as long as I have, he told me that it keeps him from going into the darkness for very long, where he used to spend a lot of time there. But now he can just kind of go in there. He uses some humor and it helps lift him out. And then community. One thing that people don't know a lot is that stand-up comics do not write their material alone. You need to write your stuff in groups.
What?
I know.
Okay.
You can write your stuff alone, but it won't be as good. It just won't. You need other people.
I didn't think about that.
And so you have people who are dealing with the effects of mental illness and trauma and grief, and they're already isolated.
Yes.
And uncomfortable.
Yes.
And it's hard to be with people.
Yeah.
But you have a singular shared purpose that brings most people joy, mm-hmm. the humor and the comedy. And it's the community. I still do comedy with students that I started with several years ago. And we will meet, not during COVID, obviously, but we did do a couple of Zoom shows during COVID.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So the community is awesome.
So there's a lot in here that humor touches on.
Yeah.
You said it makes us relatable to each other. Mm-hmm. And when you laugh, there's also endorphins that make your brain happier. So it's obviously easier to learn and connect. We're actually rewiring our brains. You said that your friend actually, instead of going into darkness, it literally rewired his brain to like not stay in the darkness.
Right.
This is also a community. These are all elements of healing. Like these are all elements of when we are helping our clients or when we're suffering, that these elements help us continue to grow and heal. Powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Because, you know, I was just so fascinated when I came across your Facebook page and I thought, this person I'm really interested in. And now I can see why this is such a powerful combination. Now, you also do a podcast called PTSD Parent.
Yes. We have been on an extended hiatus.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so tell me about the hiatus, but tell me about the podcast.
The podcast, we started Little Larry. And I say Little Larry because one of my kids said it when he was little, and I just can't stop saying it.
I love it.
But Little Larry woke up one day and I thought, PTSD Parent, that is a great title for something. Because I was really into processing through my PTSD experiences, and my kids were, what was it, like 7 years ago? So they were still in their kind of junior high, and working through how do I become an effective parent while I'm dealing with all of these triggers? And is that possible? And am I ruining their lives? No, I wasn't. And all of the feelings and challenges that go along with parenting.
Who was your audience and what were you hoping that they would walk away with after they've listened to an episode?
We really wanted to offer education and support.
Yeah, I hear you.
If you're a parent who has PTSD, that's how it started. And then we expanded it to like, there's PTSD in the home. Maybe you have a kid with PTSD. You're dealing with different people in the home who have PTSD. So we expanded it a little bit from that. But we would meet together. And so like the pandemic, we put together probably 8 episodes that have something to do with the pandemic, but also real life. So yeah. Like when you're with your kids and the noise is so loud all the time and you just feel like you want to scratch your skin off.
No kidding. Yeah. Yeah.
How do we deal with that? And we were with our kids for 24/7. But, you know, you can use that anytime.
I mean, the pandemic really just kind of emphasized all the normal problems that people had in the first place. It just sort of like opened it up wider and said, remember those problems that you were suffering from before? We're just going to make it 5 times worse.
More intense.
And it's going to be more intense.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And so, it really helped us. Like, I was pretty physiologically frozen for the first year. And so it did help me get myself going again and deal with that frozen numbness, kind of dorsal vagal depression thing going on there.
Exactly.
It was really tough.
It was a tough time.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you have a lot of advice for parents, but what I'm going to ask is, if you could only give one piece of advice to parents who are dealing with trauma of their own, but now they're trying to raise responsible, resilient adults of the future, what is the one piece of advice that you would give them?
I had to think for a minute. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of pieces of advice.
Well, I can imagine. Okay, so maybe it could be a 4-parter.
Number one.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to say that my kids are 20 and 17, and they are a couple of the most delightful, wonderful people on the planet.
Wow.
And so it's like being able to see that and say, yes, their father and I we did a good job. I did a good job. And I didn't know that was going to happen. Like, I was really scared because I came from such a terrible place from my family of origin. I think I will pass on probably the most valuable piece of advice that I ever got. And that was to be open. And I remember being kind of, I remember being very irritated by that.
That's hilarious. That is so the best piece of advice you got was the one where you're like, I don't like the way this makes me feel.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But what am I supposed to do?
Right. Yes. That's a big question. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay. So you sat with that then, because at some point in time that made sense to you.
Yeah. I took it to my therapist and I was like, I don't know what this means. And we talked about it probably over a few sessions after. Actually, just about, because I'm like, am I just supposed to sit here and do nothing? And she was like, no, being open is not doing nothing. Mm. So just being, trying to wrap my head around this concept of being open, it was a real leap of faith. It was a real stretch for me, which is interesting to look back on, because I still say that to myself a few times a week, if not every day. Mm. All you have to do is be open.
And so if somebody says to you, great, Kelly, you sold me on this idea. And if they say to you, but how, like, what does it mean? Like, what do I do to be open? What if they come to you with that? How would you answer them? Love it.
I used to try and prepare everything. I used to try to be prepared for every eventuality, every chance, everything.
Hypervigilant. Hypervigilant. Absolutely. Yeah.
And when you are open, means you allow yourself, you give yourself permission to not have to do that. You give yourself permission to just be with things as they are. And I'm not saying it's not uncomfortable for a while, but it's not uncomfortable forever. It does get easier.
So give me an example of a situation where you would then say to yourself, Kelly, this is one of those moments, be open. What would be a good example of that?
Oh my goodness, even now, I'm still practicing now. And so we're going on a camping trip and I know some of the people, and I think it was yesterday, I was getting all caught up in, is it going to be as good as last time? What are we going to talk about? Like all of these little details, like I was trying to prepare, what do I need to pack? What about this? What about that? And when I start going into the what abouts and the what ifs, that's when I become very aware of stop, just stop. You don't have to do anything. You just have to be open.
Oh,
just go on the camping trip.
So what you would have been doing if you didn't stop and take a different route, it would have been like, how do I make sure that I take care of and control every single potential for this to go south? And let me just bring 5 suitcases of every possible thing. And you're thinking, okay, I've thought of everything. But in actual fact, nobody can think of everything.
Exactly.
Right? So what you're saying is, I don't have to be prepared for every single eventuality. Mm-hmm. I just have to be open to that experience, knowing that it may go south, but that I'll be okay, really, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm. But within myself, I am safe.
Within myself, I am safe. So be open. That's a very powerful statement.
It really is. Like, it's making me sweat right now.
You're like, it stresses me, but it's good advice, but I'm stressing. I think it's hard. I think it's hard for people whose brains have been wired from trauma and complex trauma to be hypervigilant, to know that if I get triggered, if I have a panic attack, or if I, you know, whatever the situation is, I'm worried I'm going to get stuck. I'm worried that I'm not going to be able to handle this because I've had experience that I couldn't handle this.
Yeah. And it's building up that faith in yourself and safety in yourself a little bit at a time. You don't have to start with, you know, just be open to the next hour. What's the next hour going to be like? I don't know. And that's okay.
And that's okay. I love that. I love that. And so if people wanted to get a flavor of what it's like to work with you, how would they find you? What are the different types of things that you offer for people to heal from trauma and complex trauma?
They can find me. Oh, I love social media, but my website is mapyourhealing.com.
Yes.
And then I have the Instagram and the Facebook. And I tried to get into the TikTok, but TikTok is hard for me.
I hear you.
Not sure. I'm still going to try because be open.
Try it out and see what you think.
Yeah. And so they can find me there. There's four main areas. I do a PTSD remediation that gets rid of PTSD symptoms. And that takes about 10 to 12 weeks. And
wow.
I learned it from one of my therapists. And I was like, do you think I could do this for other people? And he was like, sure. So cool.
That's amazing. That sounds so magical because I think so many people with triggers just worry that you're just going to be stuck with this for the rest of your life. It just feels, you feel so helpless.
Yes. And he and I both are very clear. It is just the PTSD triggers. It's not all of the trauma.
Understood. A trauma because it's relational and it impacts a whole lot of stuff. So you're talking about specifically the flashbacks.
Flashbacks, nightmares.
Panic attacks. The very specific. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's part of it. And then of course I do healing through humor.
Yes.
That are the comedy classes.
Yes.
I do have a partner in that. Her name is Molly McNabb. Mm-hmm. And we are offering classes in the fall and the spring. And we are doing them on Zoom and we are doing them in person. I do trauma recovery where we work together to figure out what's going on in different areas of your life, how you want them to change, and moving forward with skills needed, building those skills.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit more customized.
Yeah. That's the one-on-one stuff that you would do.
Yeah. And then grief recovery. Individually and in groups with the grief recovery method, which is a structured way to work through grief. This is the latest training I've taken. So my brain is still kind of in there, but I was really skeptical about it. But then again, be open.
I can see why this is your piece of advice. It seems to work for you in different ways. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yes. Yes.
And it's great. It's a great tool to work through grief. Those are the things that I do.
And these are the things that so many people need to get relief, to be able to live life with flow. And it's a broad selection for people to be able to come to you. And ultimately, they're getting the core you attuning and bringing them that peace, but in different ways.
Well, and I like to remind people, you know, there's no one right way.
Yeah, I love that. I feel the same way.
I would. Yeah. Try what resonates with you.
And I feel like when I stumbled upon your Facebook and stumbled upon your website, that is one of the things that I connected really deeply with you, because that is actually something that I strongly believe in, which is everybody's needs are a little bit different. Like, for example, some of my clients don't feel comfortable with breathing exercises because it actually scares them, of course. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to do breathing exercise to ground yourself if it doesn't ground you. Don't do it. Like, it's... there's nothing wrong with that.
Totally.
Yeah. So I love the attitude of like, hey, listen, I have something called PTSD remediation and it helped me deeply. And if this is something that's magical for you, then let's do this so that we can help you remove at least one of those layers.
Right.
And if you like humor, hey, listen, I've got something for you. And then the trauma recovery, which is the one-on-one coaching, which of course I love. That's actually my favorite modality. But grief recovery, how powerful is that? Because grief can be so traumatizing and re-traumatizing, you know, so.
Yeah, I could talk about grief all day.
Yeah.
Because trauma are intertwined. We do not find that very many places. I believe you don't get trauma without grief, because you grieve what you had and you grieve what you didn't have. That's like a double whammy. But that's just me. I think they're intertwined.
I think so too. I think that there are these different intersections. So the one that I was more fascinated with before was shame.
Like the
intertwining of shame. But I have shifted recently into really understanding that if you don't actually properly grieve, it's stuck inside.
It is. It is stuck in
there. It is. But what you just said too was interesting, because it's not just grieving a person who is not in your life. That's one type of grief. What you just said was really powerful. Mm-hmm. Grieving what you had and then grieving what you didn't have, because you're like, gee, I wish they were different. Those are like really strong feelings of grief. Like that's grief.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are, you know, we don't talk about it in our culture, losses, all the big, all levels of grief. We don't talk mm-hmm. about saying bye. We don't, you know, mm-hmm. ritual. We don't mm-hmm. have any of that. We don't mm-hmm. have any tools.
We lost, like lots of us come from different places and this is a new world. Yeah. And so you don't have the traditions, or, you know, you don't have, like you said, rituals. You don't have this deeper cultural societal way mm-hmm. to help us process all sorts of things.
Mm. Yeah. And the colonization, like I have clients all over the world. One mm-hmm. of them is in Africa. We talk about colonization quite a bit. It's real and it has changed the fabric of their culture.
It's destroyed.
Get back to your ancestors, basically.
For many generations. And it's built into our global psyche.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Like there's hardly a part of the world that's been untouched by colonization in one way or another.
Yeah.
That's exactly. true. That's a big one. At least it's a topic that is becoming more open for us to talk about without blaming or hurting anybody now. It's just, this is a part of our history and who we are, right? Mm-hmm. We're not saying like, hey, Kelly, you're white. You know, we hate you. Like, it's not that. It's us saying this has impacted all of us, you know, mm-hmm. you and me and all of us. So I think it is a powerful topic to talk about. Kelly, it was such a pleasure getting to know you and hearing your story. And knowing how you work with people to help them heal from PTSD, which is a real thing. Feel like when you see it, you can't unsee it. Like you can see when somebody is responding from their trauma self. You can see that if they had some help, that they would feel a lot more relief with their lives and have better relationships.
Yeah.
So I think it's amazing what you do. Thank you so much for what you do. And thank you for sharing with us here at Sandwich Parenting.
Thank you for inviting me. This was wonderful.
I look forward to our continuing.
See, I don't know.
Interactions.
Me too.
Good care. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. I hope that you learned something new that will help you along your parenting journey. I know I always do. You can always connect with me at www.sandwichparenting.com.